This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport podcast. That's right, do not adjust your radio or computer or iPad or however you're listening to us today, because this is Alfred Big Nasty Kunwa kicking us off. I've said that, you know, me and Marcus went back and forth missing shows, so maybe there was a conspiracy theory that me and Marcus were the same person. We had somehow morphed, but now this is Exhibit A that is not true, because I'm Big Nasty Kunwa, and then Marcus Vanderberg is joining me with no sign of Nate. What's up, Marcus?
What's up, Alfred? What's going on? It's about time we did one of these shows together.
Exactly. This is the first time ever. The LA podcast is now taking over.
From rainy Los Angeles.
Rainy Los Angeles. One time it rains, and the one time me and Marcus get together and do a podcast. Next thing you know, hell's going to be freezing over. So you never know. Nate the Great is he's in parts unknown right now. What can I say? He'll be back. We have faith in Nate.
Here's our theory, though. Two theories. One, he's talking to a chick.
Of course.
Two, he's asleep. I'm going number one, because he went straight to voicemail when we called him, so.
I'm going a hybrid of the two. I'm saying he fell asleep while talking to a chick. So they did one of those deals where they are on the phone all night and they fell asleep together.
Yeah.
We'll just fall asleep together.
Yeah.
That's not very good for his phone charge. But what is very good for the UFC, Marcus, is something that a lot of people have been outraged by. One of those little loopholes that fighters have been able to take advantage of. Is it cheating? Isn't it cheating? Well, today, this past week, the Athletic Commission in Nevada decided that they were going to make a revolutionary change to a substance that has been controversial in the UFC. Why don't you educate us on that today, Marcus?
Yeah, so testosterone replacement therapy, aka TRT, is now banned from combat sports in the state of Nevada. This was announced on Thursday, and TRT was in the news this week. There was an ESPN.com story earlier in the week that sort of dived in TRT, and it pointed out that basically MMA had the highest number of TRT users compared to other professional sports, and that there wasn't any real benefits to people using TRT. So the Nevada State Athletic Commission met yesterday and they decided to ban it. Brazil is also going to follow up and also ban TRT. And this resulted in a change to the UFC 173 main event in May. Vitor Belfort, who is a TRT user to the point where his last three fights were in Brazil because he couldn't get a license to fight in the state of Nevada, has decided to pull out of the card because he wouldn't have enough time to meet the new clarifications and get a proper license. So in his place is Lyoto Machida, who will step up and get that title shot against Chris Weidman. So already this new ban has made a ripple effect in the UFC.
Yeah, and that's a matchup that I really would rather see as Lyoto Machida against Chris Weidman. And you've seen, it's no coincidence that Vitor Belfort, who really is in his career twilight, he's a UFC legend, but he had this ungodly-like comeback and resurgence since TRT. You know, he was linked to TRT, and he was, at least at the time, legally taking TRT. And, I mean, just insane highlight reel knockouts. And so now that has come down, I think we are getting the correct fight. I think we're getting a guy in Lyoto Machida who is constantly overlooked, one of the more underrated fighters in UFC, and somebody who's going to be a very tough matchup for Chris Weidman. So I'm glad. It's just something that one of the few things about UFC, which I think does so much right, that just has frustrated me. The fact that fighters are able to get around the whole substance abuse issue. And it's something that UFC's had their hands tied with. A lot of people get mad at UFC. This is an athletic commission issue just as much as UFC, because they had to pass a ban. And immediately when they did, the UFC decided they're going to follow suit. Dana White, of course, firing off text messages saying he's fired up and he's pumped up about this, as he should be. So I'm really glad. What do you think about your boy's chances against Lyoto Machida? He's not walking the park.
He's not walking the park. I think it's just going to be a – it's going to take him longer, I think, to – figure out what the hell Machida's doing in the octagon. I could almost see this fight going the distance, because I don't know if Weidman will get enough time to figure out what to do with Machida. I think with Vitor, he would have been able to get him on the mat eventually, and you would have really seen his wrestling skills on display by Chris Weidman. But yeah, it should be an interesting fight. I think it does lose a little bit of the allure, because I felt like there was more interest around Vitor just because of his resurgence and how dominant he was in 2013. Not to take away from Machida. And on that point, it sounds like Vitor will have the next fight out of the winner of these two. And he will be fighting without TRT, which should be interesting to say the least. And to be fair, he's not the only fighter who was on TRT, Chael Sonnen.
Exactly.
Frank Mir has used it. Forrest Griffin. So all these guys, Dan Henderson. So all these guys will have to, going forward, not take this stuff.
Yeah, I think the number of retirements is about to go up in the UFC over the next year or so. But yeah, no, you make good points with the Weidman-Machida fight. It's just that Weidman is still relatively new, and I think Machida's a guy who could take advantage of that aggressiveness that Weidman has, that American-type style, because if you watch the Rashad Evans-Machida fight, I thought Rashad Evans, and I still think he's a better fighter when he's right than Lyoto Machida, but he pressed, and he tried so much initially to go for that knockout, and I feel like he just kind of froze, and as soon as he froze, Machida took advantage of that. And Machida is going to run away from you, and it's not a very popular style of fighting. But the thing about Machida, he's not only going to run, he's very calculated in that he knows how to counter, he knows how to hit those body shots right on point. And that's something that I don't think Chris Weidman, or I think he needs to be ready for. Because Chris Weidman, he's like a bigger, faster version of maybe Rashad Evans, and somebody with very heavy hands that if he catches Lyoto Machida, I could see a knockout finish. But if it's one of those fights where Weidman is chasing Machida and he's playing that game, I think that gives Machida a huge edge.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the strategy I would take. I would be backpedaling all night, because we've seen now with Weidman has some decent power, decent hands. Yeah, you can ask Anderson Silva about that. He's had a decent knee, as we've seen, and we still haven't. I mean, it's been three fights now that he's really been on, or two fights that he's been on the mainstream radar, and we still haven't really seen his wrestling skills, which he's known for. So, one of these fights, we're actually going to see Chris Weidman, the wrestler, and I think we'll see actually how tough an opponent he is at this division.
Yeah, well, we go from the legal brawling to the illegal brawling. What the hell happened with Utah Valley? Who, you know, if Utah Valley is making a headline, something went wrong. There's some controversy. So tell us about Utah Valley and New Mexico State, Marcus.
Yeah, so the WAC. You know, this is a conference that people usually don't pay attention to until tournament time. But Utah Valley, New Mexico State last night in Utah Valley. And in the game, one of the New Mexico State players decided to chuck a basketball player at a Utah Valley guard. Nailed him. The New Mexico State player is ready to go. He gave the Universal signal for go time. And as this was happening, the fans were storming the court at Utah Valley. And unfortunately, they headed into the direction of the New Mexico State team, and a brawl broke out between the students of Utah Valley and New Mexico State. It was hard to tell what exactly went down in the fight, just because it was, I mean, we're talking about WAC basketball. We're not talking about the best camera quality and production value here. But I do know that there were some punches thrown, and ultimately, this might be the beginning of the end of this whole storming the court, because we've always worried about player safety. And when you have fans and students and players getting entangled like that and fighting like that, you really can't have that. I mean, that's just as bad as what happened with Marcus Smart earlier in the month when he shoved the fan in the crowd. It's just something that you can't have. And I'm curious to see what the NCAA does about court storming going forward.
Yeah, we're now having a player versus fan civil war in the NCAA, but the NCAA is going to have to be very careful in legislating this, because I agree that this should result in some type of rule that fans can't storm the court. But they can't storm the court to begin with, and if the NCAA pushes too hard to have them not storm the court, they're going to get the opposite effect, and fans are going to now – you're going to get more resistant. When you get that mob mentality, and let's say there's just a moment where a small school defeats Duke, and it's just this upset, or there's a shot at the buzzer – that's emotion. Storming the court is 100% emotion, and it's not something that people are going, let's form a single file line, and people aren't going to be thinking, oh, we can't go on the court, and they're never going to have enough security to stop these fans from running on the court. So if they try too hard to tell fans they cannot storm the court, it'll just get uglier. So me and Marcus are leaving LA, and we'll be right back with or without Nate. More Kings of the Sport next.
What's going on, party people and everybody out there in podcast land? It's your man, Nate. And we'll get back to the show in just a little while. But while we got some time, I just wanted to let you guys know the three ways you can get in touch with the Kings of Sport. Way number one, you can tweet us on Twitter, because that's where people tweet people, apparently. You can hit us up on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Way number two, you can email us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. That's thekingsofsport@gmail.com. And finally, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. So there you have it. Those are the three ways you can get in touch with us. You can leave feedback. You can join the discussion. Three ways you can be down with the Kings. We good, Marcus? Do we have to pay warranty for this? Because I ain't got G-Funk money.
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, Nasty and Marcus. Now, not exactly alliterative, but again, both in L.A., both have the same time zone, so we were actually able to sync up and for the first time watch SmackDown in what was billed as Batista telling the fans what he really thinks of him. So me and Marcus off air, we're watching this and reacting in real time. It's real cool. So you guys are getting some pretty cool stuff, some synergy here. Marcus, Batista pretty much turned heel. I mean, he framed it as like John Cena would, where he says, if you're going to cheer for me, cheer for me. If you're going to boo me, boo me. But then he proceeded to just tear these fans apart, saying that you're 195-pound heroes, can't stop me, and I'm going to destroy all your heroes. And then Dolph Ziggler came out, and so now he's got a little TV program with Dolph Ziggler. Is this the right move? Is this WWE making a rash decision? And what do you think this means for WrestleMania?
It feels like a rash decision. I mean, I think they realized the pay-per-view at the Chamber last week that, you know, once you start chanting Bautista, that it's going to be tough to bring it back around. So I might as well flip the switch. But at the same time, you got two heels in the main event for WrestleMania 30. I mean, I do wonder if this still leaves the door open for someone to come in for that third spot in the match. But
Triple H?
Wouldn't it be funny if all three of them wrestled for the title? And Flair was the ref.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. There's your little Evolution title.
Screw you, like Internet.
That. That's Evolution.
Yeah.
It goes on forever. It just, you know, just like Evolution.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I think it's the right move. I think it's – I'm surprised they just went with it. And because – when they're building Batista, he's gonna tell you what he thinks and this, that, and the other. I felt like kind of like a tease, like they were gonna swerve you, like they're gonna lead you one way and then go the other way because they want people to tune in, and then they're gonna get something else. But they just kind of stayed that course with they tease Batista turning heel, and that's exactly what happened, and that's exactly how he'll be received. And just watching Batista in the ring, he was so uncomfortable and. Obviously, for obvious reasons, he was just kind of taken aback by how he was initially received when he was a babyface. It just didn't seem natural because he's not a really good natural babyface, and just saying, I love this business and cutting these cookie-cutter promos was just not him. And so now to see that Dave Batista that left in 2010 underneath that spotlight when he was at the top of his game, I mean, he picked up right where he left off. I loved it. I loved how he took his shirt off and he stood in there and said, this is what a WWE champion looks like. It was kind of old school. And I don't know what they're doing this match, Marcus, but we talked about this off air in that initially it's a match that people didn't want, but that has built to such a fever pitch of people saying we don't want this match. You got to admit, it's going to be interesting if they go full blown with this match just to see how fans react to it.
I am all in on this match now. I have made a 180. I am looking forward to this match. I figure by hour four, the Hurricanes will be flowing at the Superdome. People will be sauced up, ready to go. The music will hit, and I think the fans will just have a show. And I'm looking forward to that aspect more than the actual match itself. I mean, I don't care either way who wins the match. But I just want to see how both wrestlers handle adversity. I think Orton is used to it by now, but I still think Batista... It makes me wonder if he was watching the product before he got back, because I really thought he came off someone as, like, he was expecting them to cheer him like the Batista of, you know, 07, 08. And he, you know, seemed confused as to why people weren't cheering for him. He's this big, bad dude, you know. He's the quote-unquote Vince McMahon prototype when it comes to a wrestler. Why aren't you cheering for me? And I'm glad he's finally getting back into the role he's used to, right down to the wife beater he was wearing tonight in the ring. Quite the outfit. The Kane outfit. The Kane wife beater.
Love the hat. Love the paper route hat. He got the glasses. He knows what he's doing. And I love how he, very, very, very savvy by Batista, he broke out those same skinny jeans that he was crucified for with those sneakers, the same ones, knowing he was going to get that type of heat. So, you know, Batista knows exactly what he's doing. He's a pro, at least in that standpoint.
And I wonder if they did this promo tonight instead of Monday, because if they did try to do this interview, they try to do this heel turn on Monday, I think Batista might have cried in the ring.
It would have been drowned out. It would have been lost on everybody, and people would be asking, wait, Batista's heel, when did that happen? Because And let's get into that, Marcus. And as we get into the March 3rd Raw from Chicago, which I've dubbed Raw-mageddon, and I'm going to talk about this a little later. I'm going to write about this. I feel like fans hijacking shows is now like a modern staple. It's become part of WWE's culture that this internet fan base has been so empowered with Twitter, with social media, to where, yes, they're the 10%ers, but they're a loud 10%. And they're the ones who show up to the show. And we're going to see it March 3rd in Chicago. We saw it at Elimination Chamber. We saw it at Royal Rumble. We've seen it in Seattle on Raw. Fans just taking over a show because they're not happy. Is this a culture of WWE? And is this something you think WWE should try to manage? Like we've heard strategies of bringing in Hulk Hogan to try to quiet them down. Or should WWE just lay back and accept the fact that some shows are just going to be taken over by the crowd and that's going to be part of the spectacle?
I think they will let it happen when they want it to happen. So night after Mania, I think everyone knows at this point, they've come to terms that, you know what, the fans are going to do their thing. But for a show like this, part of me wonders if they are, you know, worried about what's going to happen and if they want to try to be in control and if they're going to book their show accordingly to try to keep the fans on their side. The fact that Aaron Paul is the guest host on Raw this week raises that issue. You're bringing someone in off the, you know, one of the most popular shows in recent history, Breaking Bad, and trying to have him in there. You can drop a bitch and then maybe you'll get the fans on his. I don't know. It just seems weird that they're already advertising a rematch between the Wyatt family and the Shield. So I think they're already trying to get ahead of the fans and hopefully, which won't happen, but they're in their heads, in their minds, they're thinking that they can one-up the fans, and that's not going to happen, folks.
Right, and you brought up a good point, Marcus, last week when you said that it's like WWE may be embracing this in that they awarded the New Jersey crowd as best crowd. And that was the infamous crowd that during Sheamus and Randy Orton chanted everything but RKO and Brogue. You know what I mean? In that WWE will, to some degree, acknowledge fans when they're acting like this, and they will reward fans. So I think it's a double-edged sword to where, yeah, sure, it's a very fun atmosphere, but WWE doesn't want this throughout their show. They don't want this to become a trend, but it will. And they're going to have to find some way to deal with this.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it's a, you know, I think that the fact that the show is in Chicago leading up to WrestleMania was smart on their part. I think, you know, they know that this is going to sell out. This is before Punk, by the way. We're talking about before any of that stuff went down in terms of when they decided to book their lead-up shows to Mania, that, you know, they're going to Chicago for a reason. They're going to Brooklyn for a reason. They're hitting their big markets and you know, next week or 2 weeks they're in San Antonio, which I'm not sure what that crowd's going to be like. But, you know, I think this is, you know, purposely done in terms of trying to build up that run to Mania. And Chicago just happens to be one of those spots. And, you know, I was telling you guys earlier, I was debating about whether to make that drive up to Chicago to go to Raw. I'm going to Indianapolis tonight. And it's a 3-hour drive, but the weather is going to be, or is expected to be bad. So it'll be a game time to decision whether I make the trip to Raw or not. So,
tweet Marcus, hashtag do it, Marcus. It's going to be such a memorable show. And, you know, they're not going to quiet them down. It's Chicago. It's a hot venue. They have a reason to be angry.
Their hero is gone.
Their hero is gone. But you know what you do? And I don't think he's coming back at all. I don't think there's a single chance.
I don't think so either.
So WWE just needs to run with it. And I don't know what kind of – if he's persona non grata, if they're going to Chris Benoit him. I don't know. But you take advantage of it knowing that Batista will get the most heat of anybody, you know, because he's just such a target, such a hot magnet right now, lightning rod, that you just play with it. And you play CM Punk's theme music and you have Batista come out to it to kick off the show. And that will be the peak. Like that's the, like WWE trying to burn out the fans as early as possible on this whole CM Punk debate. You hit it head on. You just have Batista standing there in a spotlight and you have maybe 5 minutes of heat. And then you cut a 5-minute promo, which is all really Batista should be doing with his promos. And you go away. And I think that would just kind of nip it in the bud. Like, hey, we realize what happened. This is our way of dealing with it. We're sorry he's not here. At least you got that momentary feeling as if he would be here. Let's move on.
Oh, that would be such the swerve. I mean, the only reason I would say that won't happen is because they haven't mentioned him once on TV since he left.
Right.
Which is weird because other guys have left in the past and, you know, it wasn't as secretive or anything like this. So I'm curious to see what they do. I think, all right, do you think they'll eventually, sometime during the 3-hour show, mention his name on the broadcast just because the crowd will be too loud and they'll just force their way onto the show?
I don't. I think they're going to soldier on, but I think Triple H, if he has a speaking role, which, I mean, obviously he should, leading up to WrestleMania, I think he's going to say something insider. You know, Triple H loves that. It's too good of an opportunity for somebody like Triple H to pass up. So he'll make some reference that we'll know he's talking about CM Punk, and he'll do it to try to get heat on himself in this feud with Daniel Bryan. I could see him saying something about, don't be a little punk, you know, or, you know what I mean? some Easter egg that people, that'll just drive him all crazy.
Yeah, this is the most anticipated Raw I've been looking forward to since probably, when was Raw 1000, last year? 2 years ago?
Yeah.
No, 2 years ago now.
Was it 2 years
2012,
ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It was before Raw came back for Royal Rumble. So yeah, 2012, yeah, well, ahead of 2013.
Then I guess the Raw from last year then in Jersey then. So this should be a good appetizer for the night after Mania in terms of the crowd.
Yeah, and a good appetizer for the WWE main roster was the NXT Arrival show, where we got to see the stars of tomorrow. And this is something to where one of my fears for the WWE Network was that they could have just cannibalized their business. And they're in danger of having fans go back, watch the Attitude Era. Most of what's on WWE Network is nostalgia. We've got even the original programming, you know, Monday Night Wars, Legend House. Look at these pay-per-views from back in the day. And people could go to WWE Network and say, man, wrestling used to be cool. I'm going to stay here. But it shows like NXT Arrival, which was last night and on Thursday, and a very good show where you got to see some of the top flight wrestlers who have yet to make it to the main roster. Shows like that are really going to help move the WWE network and brand forward. And I think this needs to be more of the focus. And, you know, the nostalgia is going to bring them to the product, just like you do with The Rock. But then there's other guys in the show like Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan who fans will get to know by being there. And I think NXT Arrival is the WWE Network version of that, to where now that they've got all these fans with nostalgia, they're going to see the stars of tomorrow. What did you think about Arrival, Marcus?
I thought it was a great show. I thought it was interesting when Stephanie McMahon came out and made sure to point out that, you know, WrestleMania isn't the first live event on the network. This is. And, you know, they did have some issues with the stream for some people, which... just the good news is that people were actually watching NXT, but the bad news is, yeah, they need to get that nipped in the bud. But right off from the opening match, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, I thought that match was better than anything on Elimination Chamber last week. And it really told a story. If you've been following NXT, that you know these two guys have had this history now over almost the past year. They've had this great 2 out of 3 falls match, and this was sort of this was built up as the final chapter of this feud. And you know, the match had several near falls. Cesaro eventually got the pin and showed a bit of a baby face side of him. He went back in the ring and hugged Sammy and you know, was whispering something in his ear. And it was really a cool moment for the opening of the show, and I think it just shows you that, you know, what the importance of NXT and that training center is for this company, because we've seen some great matches come on as a result.
Yeah, they've invested a lot into the future of the WWE, and it may not seem like it watching WrestleMania every year, seeing these old legends come back to headline the card, but, I mean, that performance center is state-of-the-art. They've got that crash pad that's going to be something that's a safety issue, as well as adding years to wrestlers' careers. And then you've got shows like NXT Arrival, to where NXT is a focal point. And it just ran, the thing was, it just ran like an ECW show, I feel like, with the crowd. It's that small, intimate venue, but it's way nicer from a production standpoint. And you could hear the crowd come through better on TV. That's why I've always preferred arena shows to stadium shows, in that arena shows and small venues, you can hear the crowd better, and it just makes it seem like more of a special, intimate environment. And look, the Divas, we got a Divas match and a Divas chant, and this next generation of the WWE Divas, because under the John Laurinaitis era, one of the many mistakes he made was trying to teach models how to wrestle. So we got a lot of the Kelly Kellys, and we got a lot of the Candice Michelles, who eventually got better, but by the time she got better, she got hurt. And you got a lot of wrestlers who just couldn't really, they weren't trained as wrestlers. Now we saw Paige, who's been wrestling since she was, I believe, 13 years old.
Yeah.
She comes from a wrestling family, Brittany Knight, and she's amazing when you get to see her. And then Emma, who's also a very well-trained wrestler. And we're going to see more divas like this. Summer Rae has made strides. And, you know, I think I'm very excited for the future of WWE. And if WWE gets behind NXT through the network, I think it's only going to help them moving forward, build the next star, and hopefully replace John Cena one day.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to mention the other company that Nate pimps on the show every week, but I did notice that their rating took a bit of a dip.
There's an Night Wars.
That other company only drew a 0.94. last night, so it was down a little bit from last week. So, you know, I don't think it'll make a huge impact, but when you give wrestling fans an option between the two, I would lean towards NXT at this point over what's going on Spike TV. So
yeah, me too. And it's not like it doesn't come off as a second-rate show, because you had Shawn Michaels came out before the main event to ascend the title. You had Dusty Rhodes in the crowd, Pat Patterson. You had the legends on the show. You had Triple H on the show. So you saw the WWE guys on the show giving the rub to the NXT guys. So it just kind of, it felt like a territory, you know? It felt like, I wasn't around the territory days, but I've OD'd on territory footage on YouTube. And you would see a character who played one character go to a territory and do a completely different character, and have a completely different role, like how we saw Cesaro kind of as a babyface. And then, you know, by the time you get to back to your normal territory, you're just back to that normal character. And I kind of like that. Kind of like that development and variety that you would get. So a really good show.
Two more things. One, we got a Too Cool cameo.
Yes, yes.
Which was unexpected. And then two, probably my, or our favorite part of the show, Tyler Breeze.
Yes. We were talking about that. He's like a metrosexual character who has a selfie. And, I mean, just one of those guys, kind of like Fandango, who just is 110% into his character. And, I mean, I really cannot wait to see him get to the main roster. He's somebody they can do a lot of fun things with. He kind of plays that gay card. But, you know, he's clearly like a metrosexual who's very vain. And as paint by the numbers as that sounds, the way Tyler Breeze pulls this off, because we've seen everything in wrestling, but the performances is what's important. And Tyler Breeze as a performer, as a character, is, I think he's going to be something huge.
It's picture like a prettier Dolph Ziggler.
Yes.
And you have Tyler Breeze, and his gimmick is great. I think it'll definitely work on the main card. He will instantly be a heel. But I think also that the marks will embrace it and roll with it and find the humor in it. And that's what NXT has, is they have characters who actually have humor compared to, I think there's less of that now on the main roster. I mean, I don't find Santino funny. But there's less of those kind of guys currently. And I think a lot of them are in NXT, and hopefully they have the chance to get an opportunity on the main roster.
Yeah, and when I first saw him, I've seen him perform a couple times. That theme music is just intoxicating. I'm a really big fan of techno music, and it's just such a hokey version of like techno electronic music that I can't help but love it, you know?
Yeah.
So, and look, we're bashing that other company. So right now, we're going to Hampton News, Virginia. So just hang tight. We'll be right back, and we're going to go try to find Nate so he can defend his other company. Otherwise, we're not talking about him. Yeah, how do you like that, Nate? Let you be. Chitty ching ching, could buy anything, cop that, oh oh, calibrate, 30 degrees low, make it hot for me, drop that, oh oh oh, damn, yeah, shit, can't shoot, stop this, yeah, yeah, with the shit, hey, oh 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 oh, damn, with the shit, yeah, it's not just any day, it's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey everybody, you remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do too. My name is Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nasty still holding it down for Los Angeles and the show. I can't rep Los Angeles hard enough. And now that we're talking about Southern California, Nate, I believe you have a very interesting story that involves God.
You call me Nate?
Oh, God. Freudian slip. It's like waking up in bed and calling the woman another name. That is horrible. Oh. I hope you forgive me.
Oh. I probably tower Nate. Over Nate by like 5 inches.
See, we're not talking TNA, but the spirit of Nate still lives on the show. I call him Nate. Unbelievable.
That's all right. I'll move on.
We're keeping it. It's on the show.
Keeping it. So former San Diego State running back Adam Uia was in the headlines twice now this week. Once was at the Combine when he just up and left. And the reason for leaving is because he said God told him that the Seattle Seahawks were going to draft him, which was a bit of a red flag for NFL teams because he went all the way to Indianapolis and then decided to just walk away without going through any of the tests. But if that wasn't bad enough. Later on this week, we found out that after he left Indianapolis, he flew down to Fort Lauderdale, and he ended up living 3 days at the Fort Lauderdale airport.
Wow.
Just hanging out because he said, quote, he was telling me when I picked him up that God told him to stay at the airport and don't do anything, just stay here. That's what he did for 3 days straight. He said on the fourth day, this is a friend of his, on the fourth day he told me he couldn't do anymore. He decided to call me. So, quite the peculiar story. He is deeply religious, but I'm not sure how accepting GMs are to stuff like this, because it does signal sort of a red flag for teams, and you know, can't really, you know, trust this guy.
Even though it is framed with religion, where I'm sure there's a lot of religious GMs, that this is not going to be taken in any good light. There's no way any GM is going to say, well, you know, I could see it. You know, what if, I mean, this, we were just talking about this off air, that he went to Indianapolis, or I think you just said that, he went to Indianapolis and then decided to turn around as if he had that premonition. So what if he becomes a big star in the week before a Super Bowl, he does this? And to be honest, I'm surprised we don't see more of this. There is a lot of a religious theme in the NFL, and you see this with the Michael Sam issue, the main resistance of players saying that I'm deeply religious, and that's why I'm not okay with this. And we've seen this with Glenn Coffey, who walked away from football, very talented up-and-coming running back, was the heir apparent to Frank Gore in San Francisco, and he just walked away because he said God told him to, and he decided to pursue a life of religious salvation. And we saw this with Reggie White, who left and then came back because he said he had conversations with God. So this happens in the NFL. I am honestly shocked that it doesn't happen more often, but I mean, this is not, especially in such a critical time period where GMs are looking for anything, any little thing from somebody's past to try to exploit and see, is this going to have an effect on this guy's psyche when he's in the trenches, when the going gets tough? And this is gonna blow him out of the water.
Yeah, and there's a photo online of him on his flight to Florida where he was wearing his combine gear. He didn't even change out of his clothes. Oh my. And that was on Monday, and no one heard from him until Friday when his friend, I guess, down in the Miami area was the one who got the call, and he found out that he was at the airport for the last 3 days. So, I first of all, I've been to the Fort Lauderdale airport a few times. How did he even get away with living there for 3 days? I mean, that airport is not a busy airport. I mean, there's a point in the night where there really should be no one in there, and I just wonder how he even managed to pull that off.
Well, there's a rule where you can stay in certain parts of the airport. Was that Tom Hanks movie?
Oh, that's right. Castaway? Or no, not Castaway. Is it Up in the Air?
No, that was George Clooney. The Terminal.
Terminal.
It's like the Terminal meets Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. You know, but I think if you're in the Terminal, there's a certain place that you can just stay there as long – it's something about their boundaries. But I know that you can do this just based on that movie. I don't know. I don't know if that movie was, you know, being facetious or anything. But if that stands to be true, then obviously this is something that's within the law. But I mean, it's so bizarre that he didn't change. Or I mean, he must have just had a premonition.
Yeah, and that's where he's from, by the way. Covina, your old neck of the
is
woods
that
area.
Right?
Neighbor.
I was going to say Deep South. I was going to say some Baptist area, you know?
Covina, wow. California.
So, wow. Well, I mean, he didn't come back to... I'm surprised that he didn't get on a plane. I mean, if God was talking to him, you'd think God would want him to pay a visit, so get on a plane so he could be as high in the sky as possible. But that couldn't have been, you know, hopefully he probably tried to jump out of the plane to try to land on a cloud or something like that. So I'm glad he just stayed grounded in the airport.
Yeah, and he is back home in L.A. now. So we'll see what happens. He was actually expected to be a pretty high pick. He was the fourth leading rusher in San Diego State history. Behind Marshall Faulk. But yeah, I'm curious to see if he's another one now between Michael Sam disappointment at Combine and now this. I just wonder if both guys would get drafted.
Yeah, I mean, from one bizarre Combine story to the next, Blake Bortles, who is an up-and-coming quarterback, kind of making a Ryan Tannehill-like leap in a lot of GM and draft circles, quarterback from University of Central Florida. He's known for having a very gorgeous model girlfriend in Lindsay Duke, who was the subject of quite a few questions that he described as awkward from NFL GMs. If you'll remember, NFL GMs do tend to grill players and try to, like we just said, get as much out of the player as possible about their background to see what type of human being they are. But this might have been one of those questions that kind of crossed the line in that Blake Bortles described that it was some awkward questions, he said. He said one of the questions that he received from GMs was, you know, if we come to town, will she, as in Lindsay Duke, be there for dinner? I mean, that is it's creepy. It's pretty much them saying, like, hey, we'll talk to you, but bring your girlfriend. And I don't know why they would want to ask that type of question, Marcus.
I mean, how do you respond to that? Because at the same, you know, at one point it's creepy, but at the same time, these are the people who are going to eventually, you know, give you millions of dollars. So you sort of have to toe the line there and you know, give an answer probably that you don't want to. But I mean, do they really think they have a shot with Blake Bortles sitting there? That, you know, or they just want to sit there and stare at her?
You know, it's unknown which DMs did this. You know who I think probably the organization who probably did this is the New England Patriots. It's cerebral, and I'll tell you why. It's them. If it was the Patriots doing this, it would be them testing him, seeing, is this guy jealous? This guy's got a gorgeous girlfriend. He's about to become a high-paid star. We're going to give him all that money. What if he walks out in public with his girlfriend? What if he's playing in a game at a Jet Stadium? And at MetLife Stadium, the fans are taunting him and taunting his girlfriend, saying that they slept with his girlfriend. Well, what is he going to do? And this might be a little bit of that cerebral, like, okay, we're going to ask about your girlfriend, see if she's going to come to dinner. That's the only reason I think that they can get anything productive out of this, is that they're testing him to see, is he a jealous type? Is he the type of person who would melt down and get angry and show some signs of wear and tear if we start talking about his girlfriend?
That's a good theory. This is the same girlfriend who got popped for a DUI in October, and I'm going through her photos on Twitter. And one of the photos she posted on September 11th is these two mugs of beer. And the quote is, and it's not even 10 a.m. yet, so the stroll lights the party. And unfortunately, her drinking got her arrested in October. So, you know, maybe he likes the bad girls.
Yeah, I mean, she still looks pretty good for a mugshot. She still cleans up. I mean, that's not cleaning up, but she still looks good without makeup, I'll tell you that. but we're going to see a lot of makeup this Sunday on the red carpet, Marcus, because it is going to be a national pastime in the Oscar race. And the Oscars, with sports gambling and gambling getting to an all-time high, the Oscars, all the big categories have odds. We're going to run down a little bit of an Oscar preview. I know Marcus isn't the movie guy, but I dragged him into this, and you're going to have fun doing this, Marcus. We're going to run down all the categories, talking about who you think is going to win. And don't just go with the favorites. I'll name who the favorites are and what the odds are, but we'll go ahead and take turns picking, see how we do. A lot of Oscar drinking games I see on the internet that could be fun to take advantage of based on all the cliches that are taken advantage of on traditional shows like this. So let's start with Best Picture. There are 10 pictures nominated, 9 pictures actually, and 12 Years of Slave right now, which is kind of a surprise to me, is leading with 1-5 odds. I wanted to see this movie when it started getting the buzz, but I had heard just so many people say it was just so hard to watch. And as much as I love Django, I could never watch Django again because of some of those just ugly scenes. And I hear 12 Years a Slave is like the serious version of that. So I'm not sure if I could ever get myself in that type of mindset to watch it. But 12 Years a Slave, currently leading for Best Picture. Also, Gravity comes next, followed by American Hustle, The Dallas Buyers Club, Wolf of Wall Street, Her, Philomena, Captain Phillips, and Nebraska. So who you got?
I am going 12 Years a Slave. I don't get the Gravity. Well, let me start off by saying this. I haven't seen any of these 9 films, but just from what I know about them, I didn't understand what the allure was about Gravity. I'm not a big Sandra Bullock fan, so maybe that's the reason why I'm sort of poo-pooing that film. But it seems like it's going to come down between 12 Years a Slave and Gravity, and that really surprises me because I just figured Gravity was just another sci-fi space adventure. But you know, the Academy seems to love this film, the critics seem to love this film, and I think it'll lose. Though I think 12 Years a Slave will leave an impact with the voters, and it's one of those films that you mentioned not watching because it's too hard to see. I feel like it's one of those films that, like, we don't need to see because we sort of know what goes on. But there's a lot of people out there in the world who aren't aware of slavery and what it's actually happened.
Right.
That see this film and a light goes off, and it, you know, they become like a champion for a specific film, and I think 12 Years a Slave will fit into that category and will take the award.
Absolutely, and it would be very fitting. I know it's not quite going to be Black History Month anymore, but it'll be around that realm to see the history being made with if Steve McQueen is able to win. Would be a good moment. But I'm going to go with Gravity. I think Gravity is going to come in and pull off what is going to be seen as a slight upset, just because the thing about Gravity is it's like the actor's movie. It's the lore was that it was pretty much just Sandra Bullock in a tour de force. And you had George Clooney. Any movie where somebody could just completely outshine George Clooney in a featured role, I mean, it speaks to the movie and the direction, and we'll get into that in another category. And I just think this is something they're going to see as what a great movie to keep us captivated with one person's performance. And I think it's just going to translate to other categories. So I do think Gravity is going to win this. But 12 Years a Slave, I mean, race is still as hot button of an issue as it's ever been, with the now talk of the N-word dominating the NFL, and we're seeing these issues like there's a school that draped the Confederate flag against this African-American Civil War figure. So race is still a hot issue. So they love infusing politics in these types of things.
One quick thing about race. You mentioned it's not to be Black History Month, but just important to note out that there is a Black female president of the Academy. Cheryl Boone Isaacs will be leading her first Academy Awards on Sunday. So that's something to make note of.
Ah, that's a story. That's very fitting if 12 Years a Slave won. So, well, let's get into Best Director. Right now, leading, I mean, just running away with it. He's pretty much already won the Oscar, and Alfonso, I don't know if I'm saying this right, Cuarón for Gravity, followed by Steve McQueen, David O. Russell of American Hustle, Martin Scorsese, Wolf of Wall Street, and Alexander Payne from Nebraska, which I think is the most underrated movie in all of these categories. So who do you think is going to win Best Director?
If I was a betting man, and it looks like it's 10-1 odds, I would go 12 Years a Slave in a parlay.
Wow.
Just double up and increase your odds. But I think it's going to be Alfonso Cuarón and Gravity.
Yeah. No, I don't see
how. And that'll be the redemption for not winning Best Picture, then he'll definitely win Best Director.
Yeah, I really, and that's the thing. That's the reason that this movie was so, they were able to keep the fans captivated without burning them out on one character, is the direction and the way he was able to not really hide her, but feature her at the same time and include other elements in the movie. So yeah, I think he did a great job. Let's go on to Best Actor, which, I mean, I've heard internally from Oscar, you know, Oscar people, if you want to call them that, that the Academy is scared to death to give an award to Matthew McConaughey because of what he might say. He's a bit of a free spirit. I've heard stories about this guy, but he was that good in Dallas Buyers Club that he is currently the leader with 1-5 odds, followed by Leonardo DiCaprio, who looks like he's going to get screwed out of another Oscar, 12 Years a Slave, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Bruce Dern, and then Christian Bale of American Hustle. So who do you think takes this award?
I'm doing Leo. Leonardo DiCaprio, Wolf of Wall Street. He briefly went to my middle school. He's a unicorn, by the way.
Oh, there you go.
So I had to stick with the unicorn. He also left like Mila Kunis and the rest of them. But I'm going with Leo.
Okay, you know what? Because it's amazing. He's never won an Oscar for Best Actor, and that completely blows me away. It seems like he's nominated every year, and he just does such great work that if anybody, I think he's like the great, he could go down as the greatest actor of all time. And I would like to see him win, but I just got to go with, I'm going to go with the chalk here with Matthew McConaughey, because I've heard, and just it, the story surrounding how he was so, he pretty much put his life on the line for this role because he lost so much weight and was just looking gaunt. And it's one of those things that you do that, okay, the agreement is that I'm going to get an Oscar if I do something like this. And he was very good. Matthew McConaughey, he's got that Ben Affleck quality to him, that he was really bad in his movies early, but lately he's just been turning up his game. And I think this is going to be his culmination. Best Actress. Meryl Streep, as always, is nominated, and as always, she's not expected to win, as usual. So she's there at the bottom with 50 odds for August. Judi Dench for Philomena is nominated, and leading the pack is Cate Blanchett, coming out of nowhere with Blue Jasmine, followed by Amy Adams of American Hustle and Sandra Bullock of Gravity. Marcus, who's going to win?
I think it's going to be Cate Blanchett, but you know, if you're gonna bet on this stuff, Sandra Bullock. Why the hell not? 28-1 odds. You mean
great? Yeah.
I mean, you never know, and it wouldn't surprise me if they read her name, and if it was one of those nights that Gravity just swept everything, and she somehow won Best Actress, which wouldn't be her first one, correct? She won for
She won from The Blind Side.
That's right. Yeah.
And yeah, she's slowly but surely becoming an icon, like that night, the one that we're growing up with, Marcus. Because you, just growing up, the icons have always been the Meryl Streeps, you know, the those actors, Julia Roberts, and not people who they were already established by the time we got to this planet. But now it's like Sandra Bullock to us is a Miss Congeniality girl.
Yeah,
you know, you don't really picture her in that mold, but if she this after Gravity, she's pretty much this is her arrival as a top star. I will go with Sandra Bullock because I'm looking at this like a betting man. If I want it the best value, and if I want to bet that if I put a, you know, couple of bills on it, I can come home with a lot of money, I would go with Sandra Bullock. Because if you look at who's leading in each category, it's different movies, and that's not usually how the Oscars work. They focus on one movie that they give all the major awards to, and I think the books might be overthinking themselves here, and I think Gravity is going to be that movie.
Yeah, I could totally see it. I mean, is Blue Jasmine nominated for Best Picture? Let me see real quick. Nope.
No,
it's not. So that's kind of weird. That, and I mean, that's must be one hell of a performance by Cate Blanchett to be the odds-on favorite to not have Best Picture as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's going to be a fun Oscars because I think this is a great crop of movies. I haven't seen them all. I've seen a few of them just because they were nominated, so they had a lot of hype going in, and I was still impressed. I mean, they all deserve to be nominated, and I've seen years where, like, there was that movie Changeling with Angelina Jolie where I thought I couldn't believe that got nominated for anything. I thought it was – I didn't think it was her best work, but I look at a lot of these movies, and they're good. Wolf of Wall Street was also a very good movie. I don't know if you've seen it. It was very good. It mm-hmm. ran long, and the thing is, in the Golden Globes, it was classified as, like, a comedy. And that's weird because it was a very funny movie, but as it got later on in the movie, it got extremely dark to where, I mean, you couldn't laugh at anything. It was kind of had that Django quality, but at some point, they just completely ditched comedy, and it was very dark. So I would recommend that movie out of all the pack. That was a fun little... So you movie guy now, Marcus? Are you going to go out and see all these movies?
I'm kind of curious about Gravity now, just to see if I would like it. I do want to see Dallas Buyers Club. Still no interest in 12 Years a Slave. I saw Roots. I'm dead on that. and then Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle. Whenever they make their way into Netflix, so I'll probably check that out.
Yeah, definitely. It should be some good movies. So, listen, we're going to get out of here. And I'm going to make sure I don't call Marcus Nate anymore. And so that you know who he is, Marcus, why don't you tell all these people where they can find you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill. I am off to LAX as we speak, and hopefully if the weather holds up, I can make my way to Chicago Monday night for Ramageddon.
Would be awesome, man. And you can find me at This Is Nasty. I really hope Marcus makes it out to the show because, man, Marcus, I will retweet everything you say about what's going on. It'll be like, it's going to be an event, and it'll just be so much better if you're there. So hopefully we'll see Marcus at Raw. For Marcus, man, you know what? I can't take Nate's gimmick. All right, Nate, you want the show back? Come to Los Angeles and get it back. This has been the King of Sport, the LA Takeover.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here. PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that? Chad. Do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons, to the return of the hack, to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PiledriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.